Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. It is time for the final podcast on the 2018 midterm toss-up elections. It started out to be such a simple project and turned into something that really has become a marathon, but I'm glad I did it, and I promised that I would give you my conclusions. Tonight was a big celebration, went to a big steakhouse and ate a lot of food, and now I have made fresh coffee. We are burning the midnight oil, so I'm going to let you know what I think we should all look for on election day, but no predictions and no partisan axe grinding for you in this podcast, podcast 758. Want to remind everybody that Thursday, September 27th, I'm going to be emceeing the Citizens Council for Health Freedom 2018 fundraising event. They're going to have Keith Smith, MD, who is a pioneer in free market medicine. You wouldn't believe what this guy has to say about how to make healthcare affordable and dependable. It's going to be at Edinburgh, USA, and that is in Brooklyn Park. And I'll give you some more information before it starts. $100 for a single, $175 for a couple. It goes to a good cause. You can register online at, you ready? bit.ly/CCHFDINNER. bit.ly/CCHFDINNER. Fundraising dinner 2018, or you can just call CCHF at 651-646-8935 for a question, or you can RSVP by phone. I think it's a great event, and I'll tell you more about it as we get closer to it. So let's talk a little bit about how life is these days, because so many things are commodities, or they've become commodities. One gas station is as good as any other gas station. There's a coffee store on every corner. You go to National Chains to buy your groceries. And I had a question the other day that occurred to me, which is, when was the last time that you bought a product or service somewhere and you thought to yourself, God, I wish I would have known about this place 10 years ago? And yet, that's actually the key when it comes to your important things, the things that really matter to you, your wedding ring, your great-grandfather's watch, your Rolex. Think about the diamonds in your wife's wedding ring and whether or not they're secure. Wouldn't it be cool to hear your great-grandfather's railroad watch ticking again, or to see it keeping perfect time just like it did back on the Hiawatha from Minneapolis to Chicago so many years, decades ago, right? So for things that are dear, you need a jeweler that you can trust, and that is Johankin Jewelers in Crystal, Minnesota. It's been in the same family since 1886. It's not a chain. Johankin's, local family, like the things that are important to you. Johankin's known for rebuilding and repairing crowns and settings to perfection. Diamonds and gemstones, any and all jewelry repairs. I've seen people hold things up that they have done and said, look at this, it's amazing, I can't believe it. And the really cool thing is they do watch restoration and service, plus an amazing selection of vintage wristwatches and timepieces that you just got to see to believe. I couldn't believe they're so cool. And you might actually even find your great-grandfather's railroad watch. That certainly has happened. Check out johanktonjewelers.net. That is J-O H-A-N-T-G-E-N. Lots of great advice and information, including a great recent article about jewelry trends for the fall. Johankin's at 115 Willow Bend in Crystal. Call 763-537-7233, 763-537-7233, or click on that elegant Johankin's Jewelers banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. First and foremost, a couple of apologies for mispronunciations in some of these podcasts, particularly the ones about the House, because there were so many toss-ups and there are so many districts and so little time. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you know I don't like long podcasts. 45 minutes is about as long as I'll go, because I just think that a lot of podcasts just go on too long, and they are almost unlistenable because they go on for 2 hours or 3 hours, and it's kind of silly to do that. So I try to get this stuff. I try to focus the content within a not a specific time frame, but close. And that's the radio training, and I do that, and I think it makes for a good podcast, because you're moving along. And the problem with me is I read and I don't listen, I don't watch. So some of these pronunciations were not very well done. In particular, the one I remember the most is how I pronounced Spokane. No, Spokane. It's Spokane. I pronounced it Spokane. I actually was on the radio in Seattle, and this is back when I was doing stuff in 2009, you know, for my apartment, and I was doing nights at Cairo in Seattle, and you know, we had all these conversations about Spokane, and it's Spokane, Washington. It's not Spokane, Washington. It's not Spokane, Washington. It's Spokane, Washington. So I don't know what got into me, and this is like in these public situations where you go to introduce somebody and you can't remember their name. Well, that's kind of how it goes with me in pronunciations. So I'm talking about Spokane, and I go, well, you know, up in or wherever it was, down or up or wherever Spokane is in relation to Seattle, I said, and I'm not from that part of the country. I haven't been out there very much. I love it out there. I love the people. It's great. But I said, and then in Spokane, and and the producer, who was really funny, broke in and said, "What?" And I was like, "I'm so sorry. That was terrible. I know it." And you know how I know it's Spokane? Because I was watching this show on Amazon Prime last night. Now, I had just done this podcast where I talk about Spokane, except I pronounce it Spokane somewhere in there. And the TV show was about these comedians in the 50s, and one of these poets at some coffee house in Greenwich Village is doing a poem about Spokane, or Spokane. And I was like, oh my God, I pronounced it Spokane, and I was convinced that I was pronouncing it correctly. So in advance, sorry to spend 3 minutes telling you this, but in advance, I really, the pronunciations for me with some of the places, some of the people, I'm really sorry. But the focus was not on the pronunciations. The focus was on getting the data right, or at least as right as I can get it, to draw conclusions about what's going to happen in a specific election, not how to pronounce the candidate's name, because I don't live there. I'm probably never going to see that guy again, depending on what happens in the election, or hear about that guy again. And so neither are you, right? So unless you live there. So for those of you in Spokane, I am terribly sorry. I've mispronounced the name of your town 100 times, but I know I'm talking about Spokane, Washington. So there you go. So yeah, a full series, two podcasts on the Senate toss-ups somewhere in there, one on the governor toss-ups, 5 on the House toss-up races. This is a series, and this is one of the things podcasting does so well that I am so excited about, is we can do series. If I wanted to do a series of podcasts talking about the history of, I don't know, Minneapolis and St. Paul, I could do that. Whenever you have a boatload of data that you just could never fit into a radio show or anything else, you can do a series in podcasting, and it's really fun. And I don't expect everybody's going to listen to all of them. Certain people will listen to all of them, and I hope you do, and I think it's cool if you do. But they are there for everybody to listen to learn without being harangued one way or the other what the extant situation is in the statewide races, like the Senate and the governor's races, and the House races. I didn't do attorneys general. I didn't do, you know, state comptrollers and whatever, you know, your state's comptroller position is called, or secretaries of state, these other statewide races. I didn't get into House, you know, and Senate and state legislatures because, you know, the information is there, I guess, somewhere, but it's just not something I'm going to do because I realize that I could be literally doing this all the time. Maybe someday I will, but I'm not going to do it for these because I think now it's time to basically end this, let the series sit there and float down the river, and then we'll come back on Election Day and we'll find out what's going on. So I call these the close races for the 2018 midterm elections. Voter turnout for so-called midterm elections. These are elections where there is no presidential contests, Well, voter turnout for midterms is substantially lower than for presidential years. It averages about 60% turnout for presidential elections, 40% for midterms. And, you know, it's interesting because I checked it out today and I'll put a link in on the blog. But turnout for midterms had been climbing to a high of about 41% in 2010. We all know what happened then. That was the Republican wave. And then it dropped back to about 36% in 2014. I'm not making any predictions about turnout for this particular year. But in fact, turnout in 2016 for the presidential race was 1% lower than in 2008, 1% or so higher than 2012. So at the aggregate totals, 1.5% to 2% for presidential races or midterms is a big deal, especially when you see the geographic location and the individual districts where the turnout occurred and the counties where it turned out to be. To do a quick sidebar, you know, we have these things called pivot counties now. These are counties that voted for Obama twice and then flipped for Trump in 2016. And so everybody wonders whether they will continue to be on one side or the other of the political, you know, spectrum. But, you know, that's how turnout can change the outcome of elections, and it can change the contours of the commentary regarding the next election, because election coverage are kind of like wars. It is often said, it's an axiom, that the military often fights the previous war. We do that in covering political campaigns all the time. We are really covering the last political campaign when we talk about the current political campaign, because you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's the thing that drives me more than anything. According to Fair Vote, most voters, period, tend to be older, wealthier, more educated, and whiter than non-voters. It's even more pronounced in midterms. From 1972 to 2012, citizens 18 to 29 years old turned out at a rate of 15 to 20 points lower than citizens 30 and older. People who are loaded, wealthy Americans, so to speak, vote at much higher rates than those of lower socioeconomic statuses. During the 2008 presidential election, only 41% of eligible voters making less than $15,000 a year voted, compared to 78% of those making $150,000 a year or more. So to make a long story short, the question of who votes is really, really, really important. I noted on the blog at thebobdavispodcast.com and have discussed it more than once, the big fake wind story. This is the story about the weather forecaster who was leaning into the wind and, oh my God, it's amazing, the hurricane, it's blowing, I don't know if I can stand it, as people walked calmly behind him down to the beach. This has become a metaphor for how the media covers, and I put covers in quotes, the news. It's also true in politics. And it's maybe even more so. Every story has to have a dramatic storyline. Despite twists and turns, the storyline sets the dramatic arc of how the story is covered. So you have networks, writers, commentators, websites, bloviators, content creators, talk show hosts, all using this device to attract clicks, views, favorites, spike, you know, get meters to spike if you're listening to television or the radio, and otherwise get people to pay attention to moi. Pay attention to me. I'm the guy that knows. I'm this guy. I'm that guy. I'm the guy with this show, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. And it all amounts to a collective storyline, which sometimes has no basis in fact. It is designed to hook viewers and listeners, and it's clickbait. It is designed to create a sense of urgency, to grind a partisan axe, to convince viewers to act, to do something, to think something, or to vote in a certain way. All of these things, sometimes one or two of these things, or it is designed to do for a candidate what a candidate cannot or will not do for himself. Most people just call it fake news, okay? Whether they're on the right or the left, I'm telling you what it actually is. So let's go back to the fake wind video. Everything we see or hear and read has to be considered within this framework of a fairy tale. It is often told in fairy tale words. We are writing blogs for the eighth grade. There's actually an SEO qualifier on my blog software that says if you write something that's too complicated, it will flag it so that you understand that people won't be able to figure it out or read it. It's too complicated. So you have to, quote unquote, dumb it down so that it actually does better for you in terms of search engine optimization. So really what the media is doing is it's working off a sort of a fairy tale type of paradigm. Also, American politics is shot through with truisms, stories that probably never happened, sayings that may have never been said, ideas and quotes taken out of context, which are sometimes applicable, but most of the time not. They are usually dusted off and deployed to make a point in a colorful way that feeds the storyline. All politics is local. Politics is the gentle art of getting votes from the poor and campaign funds from the rich by promising to protect each other from each other. A politician is a fellow who will lay down your life for his country. The problem with political jokes is they get elected. Everyone hates Congress but loves their congressman. Now, you know, again, sometimes these apply, sometimes they don't. I'm not saying people are saying these. I'm saying that I couldn't possibly give you a long list of the things that people have said this year that are, statements to the effect of this is what's going to happen and here's why. So you add to all of this the idea that the so-called mainstream media is centered in New York City, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., and is populated almost exclusively with people who identify with the left, that the Silicon Valley bigwigs and the people who run the search engines and the social media are all on the left. And this is an idea that is not without some foundation. You know, nod to my friends on the left that it is true that most of the people that work in network television are registered Democrats. And, Silicon Valley likes to big up their libertarian credentials, most of them are what we often refer to as left-wing libertarians. So I don't believe in controlling search engine results, and I don't believe in censoring content. Because I think free speech entitles people to the opportunity to be heard on any platform. So certainly there are qualifications, and we could argue about that, and that's another podcast. But what's going on is it looks to me like there's a lot of censoring going on, and particularly to people on the right, because those people in Silicon Valley and in New York City and in Washington, D.C. are terrified of the great unwashed, many of whom are on the right. Now, it may not always be that way, but they are responding to pressure. And so there's that issue. And this is this is giving the digital media now a black eye. And so then to that, we add the mainstream media's storyline, which is also reducing credibility for media. So in 2018, the storyline is that President Donald Trump is going to lose the Republican majority in Congress, maybe the Senate, some governorships, and as a result, he will then be impeached and probably be removed from office, or at the very least, will have a very difficult second 2 years, and then he will disappear in history and we'll have a wonderful new president who will be all the things that we believe that a president should be. That's the storyline. And this supports the storyline that Trump is a dunce, a crook suffering from some sort of dementia, a Russian agent, crazy, dangerous, or an incredibly intelligent and dangerous and Machiavellian fascist, or just a plain bad president, which has previously been established. So all of these things have been established storylines. And anything that supports that storyline is the lead. So the 2018 storyline is because the president's popularity rating is below 40%, according to one pollster, because the generic Democrat vote is higher than the Republican by the latest of something like 14 points. And because Republicans are defending more House seats than Democrats, because a sitting president always loses seats in Congress, which is not true, by the way, this is the storyline, and this is why President Trump is going to lose in the midterms in 2016. And it is true that the president's party beat out the odds and gained in 1934 and 2002. In 1934, 2 years into FDR's presidency, in the midst of the Depression, Roosevelt's Democratic Party gained 9 House seats. Bush gained House seats after 9/11. In 1962, JFK lost just 4 seats in the House and gained 3 in the Senate. In 1990, H.W. Bush lost 8 seats in the House and only 1 seat in the Senate, a setback but not a shellacking. And in 1998, Bill Clinton gained 5 seats in the House and stayed even in the Senate. This is after all of the insanity with the sex in the Oval Office and so forth, or the not sex in the Oval Office. And so this all adds up to that because Trump's popularity rating is lower than that of Harry Truman at the lowest point of his presidency. It has never been this low before at this point in anyone's presidency, which, by the way, is impossible to know since the kinds of polls that track that sort of thing have only existed since Truman. So, you know, another truism. And this is the worst. Republicans, or in this case, Democrats, are fired up. And so there's going to be changes made. So we're going to talk about this, and we're going to get to some of the things I've learned from doing this analysis. Well, it's been a while since I've talked about ReliaFund, my payment processor. I'm very excited about it. I have a ReliaFund button on my website so my clients can pay with a check through my website. If you have a business, if you do business, listen up, because ReliaFund can help you. If you are a developer and you are developing back office stuff for clients or a website for clients, listen up, because ReliaFund can integrate into what you are building so that your clients can take credit card payments or checks or whatever they want. ReliaFund is a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than 2 decades. If this is you, if you are in business and you're looking for payment processing solutions, think ReliaFund, ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. No long-term contracts. They're secure. They're technology-focused. 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or check them out online at ReliaFund.com, where you can click on that banner at the top of the page at TheBobDavisPodcast.com. In my experience, presidential polls as national contests are done so often during presidential election years, they can be tracked. I've talked about this in lots of podcasts. Performance, popularity, these are all things that can be tracked for a presidential candidate in a presidential year. And you have actual votes in primaries in addition for presidential candidates being cast. So you can look at a presidential candidate and get a pretty good idea of how that guy is going to run with certain kinds of people and where they stand in comparison to other candidates. So you have a Democratic primary, you have Republican primaries, and even that is fraught with danger for predictions if the poll numbers are close. Biggest lie of 2016, the polls said Hillary Clinton would win. Well, the polls did not say that. They said it was going to be close. If you did what I did, and if you did a podcast about it, which no one did, you would know that if you broke the polls down by state and compared previous elections and looked at strongholds, you would know that it was going to be close, because in places like Ohio and Indiana and Wisconsin, there was no indication that anybody had an advantage. It was the media that said Hillary Clinton was going to win. Now they call it conventional wisdom. Well, it wasn't conventional wisdom. It was just another term for bias. They wanted it to be true that Hillary Clinton would be the next president, but it wasn't. And the reason it wasn't is because you cannot predict the future. Another big lie is the concept of a quote-unquote transformational political figure. I think it's impossible to say whether someone is transformational or not. I think it's something that can only be assessed in terms of distance and history and perspective. Think about the most transformational events, political or otherwise, of just the last 100 years. So 1918 to 2018, I would say it was the Depression, World War II, and maybe the atomic bomb, which really is World War II. I don't even know if I would put 9/11 in there, because we don't know how significant that was in the long term. Political events in the last 100 years, FDR, the 1960s, maybe 9/11. What transforms voting patterns? Well, that's interesting. I would say it's demographics, and usually not right away. For example, I think it was 1972, 18 to 21-year-olds were given the right to vote. And this was the height of the Vietnam War. If you just turned 18, you probably were going to go. And yet, 18 to 21-year-olds didn't vote in that election. And of course, what happened was they gave it to Nixon by a landslide, despite Watergate. Now, those people did vote a few years later when they became 25 to 34s, and the Reagan revolution occurred. Was Reagan transformational? Probably for Republicans. So the biggest transformational political figures of the last 100 years, not just the 20th century, but the last 100 years, I would say that Roosevelt and Reagan were probably the people that are going to emerge from history as being the most transformational. It remains to be seen whether Donald Trump or his predecessor Barack Obama truly changed American voting patterns, inspiring a shift from party loyalties and a new geographic and sociographic pattern of votes. We don't know yet. We will after the midterms, perhaps, because we'll have another data point. And if it holds that there's something different going on, well, then we'll have something to talk about, won't we? But I can't predict that because I don't know what's going to happen. And neither do you, and neither does anyone else. They're just saying that they do because they think they do. And the thing is, if you say enough that the Democrats are going to win, the Democrats are going to win, the Republicans are going to win, the Republicans are going to win, at some point you're going to be right and people will say, well, you know, he predicted that. Well, not really. He just said the same thing over and over again until it happened. So when I go through all these quote-unquote toss-up races, I want to share with you some of the things that I've learned. And I've also learned I can't possibly give you all of the insights that I've had from doing this over the last 2 weeks. I've put everything else I'm doing on hold because I wanted to get this done in a piece at the same time. Because once you start down this road, you can't wait 3 weeks and come back and do another one because everything changed from the races you did in the previous podcast. So I did it all in the last week of August and the first week of September, and it was a marathon. And so I know that in this podcast, given the time limits, and even if I talked for 2 hours, I don't think I could get all of my observations in there. But I'll try to get you the broad, sort of synopsis of all of it. First of all, I don't believe that there are as many toss-up races as they are telling you. Who's they? Larry Jacobs, Larry Sabato, Charlie Cook. And Real Clear Politics. And I actually like Sean Trendy at Real Clear. I think he does a good job. I'm a little confused as to why he has so many. He has something like 42 House toss-up races. The Senate ones, I don't think are completely out of the question. I have questioned whether the Ted Cruz race in Texas is actually a toss-up. But anyway, what they're calling toss-ups are actually just close elections. And there's a difference because, you know, a real toss-up, you just don't know which way it's going to go. A real close election, you look at the contours of the voting public and who votes in midterms in these particular states, especially with a statewide race or, a conservative or Republican congressional district. So whether it's Ted Cruz in Texas or Claire McCaskill in Missouri or Heidi Heitkamp in, I think it's North Dakota, incumbents on both sides of the political fence are engaged in a tough race. And because they are engaged in a tough race, it doesn't necessarily indicate a pickup for either party. This is especially true in House districts where Hillary Clinton had an advantage in 2016, but the Republican House member was reelected by a wide margin. Even in districts where the incumbent is retiring, it's not necessarily true that a close race means it's also a toss-up. Now, there are some genuine toss-ups, and I'm not going to go through them all because that was the whole point of doing those podcasts. An example would be, a place where, well, I'll give you two examples in a second, but I think the second point here is that the model is even worse for the so-called lean Republican or lean Democrat races, which they're selling as could flip. So are they toss-ups or are they lean one way or the other? I don't understand. The bottom line is they're close. Some could, some could not. And, deciding whether, and Sean Trendy's got Minnesota's 2nd District as a toss-up. I don't agree that it's a toss-up. He does have the 3rd. I'll talk about that in a second. But you look at some of these districts along the Central Valley in California where people have been conservative for a long time. Regardless of Hillary Clinton taking the district, their congressman is a different story. And then the reverse of that would be the 8th district in Minnesota, where Donald Trump just, raped and pillaged in the 8th district. And they still elected in 2016 a Democrat congressman, Rick Nolan, who's now retiring. So it depends on what the race is about after October 15th, not in late September. So when you hear all these guys talking about what's going to happen in Congress, saying they've never seen this or that because they're only 30, or spouting statistics like it's baseball. And here's the thing about baseball. It's pretty much the same game that we are playing today that we played in 1896. So technically, theoretically, I'm told you could take players from, you know, 1913, 1956, 1897, and 1990 and put them together on a team and play that team, and you're still on the same field. That is not politics. Many things have changed. It's not the same game. You can't spout sports statistics and come up with conclusions, because that doesn't work. Also using axioms that you heard someplace, but you don't remember where, and you don't know who it's attributed to, but you attribute it to someone like Abe Lincoln. there's a whole website dedicated to people who attribute quotes to Lincoln that he never said, for example, or they get the context of the quote wrong. And so we're back to the storylines. Is it going to be about the president, as in, are the people going to the polls, going to pull the lever for Republicans or Democrats because they feel strongly about the president? Or is it, are they going to go to the polls and pull levers because they're happy or unhappy about their health care, the economy, whether they got a job, whether their kid's going to college, whether they have to pay a student loan, or what's going to happen with North Korea? Or whether it's some local issue like a water issue, a mining issue, an environmental crisis, the aftermath of a school shooting, for example, in Florida, a hurricane in North Carolina, and all these things, Houston. And I mention these in these podcasts where I talk about this. And this is why I did these, because if you listen to them, you'll have a little bit more background on the contours of the race. You know that some of those districts in Houston are very conservative, but you also know that there's some issues related to the hurricane. You'll know that North Dallas is a very wealthy area, and it is the scene of a so-called toss-up. Is that a factor? So you would know that rather than if you listen to a bunch of NPR hacks spouting statistics going back to, GASP 1945 and saying, this means this. I don't think you can do that, and I don't think that's what political scientists actually do. They're often asked to make predictions, and I think it's unfortunate that they are, because what they do is they put themselves in a position to be quoted so that everyone knows who they are. And I think it's a disservice to voters. You should decide who you think is the person for the job. And it should be done based on what you have heard the person say, whether you've heard them speak or not, and what your opinions and feelings are about where you live. That's what these House races are all about, because local congressmen do things like help build bridges and take care of constituents and things of that nature, in addition to being lightning rods for, national issues. So I talked about a couple of key races. I mentioned the 8th. Another one is the 3rd District in Minneapolis, where Eric Paulson is in a tough challenge from Dean Phillips. I called him David Phillips in the last podcast. And I just don't think you can predict the outcome. Somebody pointed out on my Facebook page that every Eric Paulson election, he looks like, they all say he's not going to win, and yet he pulls it out somehow. So that's an example of a toss-up race that's genuinely a toss-up, because Dean's challenge to Paulson is both, heavily personality-oriented, and it has some national overtones, and Eric Paulson tends to be very shy when it comes to media and careful about his image, which is generally about the Boundary Waters, which doesn't make any sense since the Boundary Waters isn't even in his district. But that's the way it is. I mentioned the 8th District, which Trump won, but they still elected a Democrat congressman. So are these pickups one way or the other, Republican or Democrat? Just because it's always been Democrat doesn't mean that it won't flip, and just because the district voted for Trump in 2016 doesn't mean it will vote for a Republican congressional candidate. The point here is this: there are other issues and themes at play. You can't see, no one can see, and you can't see it in some national poll about whether you're going to vote for Republicans or Democrats, or how you think the president is doing, or if he's an idiot. And I will tell you, I took a look at the president's approval ratings, which supposedly are so terrible. They're very good for the economy. They're very good for foreign policy. Certainly the direction of the country doesn't seem to be good, but I don't know if you attribute that to the president or just to things going on, or whether that's a trailing issue. See, these are all details that they don't talk about in these shows, because they never get to it because they're too busy making predictions. In the end, elections are about mobilizing voters to go to the polls and vote for Republicans or Democrats. So Republicans need to mobilize their voters, and Democrats need to mobilize theirs. Now, I'll give you Minnesota as an example. So we have a state that is largely Republican, except for four counties, roughly. Hennepin and Ramsey, Olmsted County, which is down around Rochester, and St. Louis County, which is Duluth, and it's a massive geographic county. Now, St. Louis County voted for Trump in 2016. The point here is this. Those counties usually determine statewide races, and so those are the counties that you have to look at on election night. And St. Louis County usually comes in very late. Hennepin and Ramsey have traditionally come in later, and they have most people because it's Minneapolis and St. Paul. So it's all about who votes, and I'll give you an example. So the strategy for some people in a state who are managing a congressional district is to make sure that they can just add 5 or 6% turnout for their party in the election, because they know that if they add 5 or 6% more votes, even if they don't win those elections, they will turn the election statewide. Now, I'm not going to say who, but in this state, most of the state is red, quote unquote. Now, it's not really red. It just means that all of those counties and districts that look red on a map voted a majority Republican. Usually it's 51-49, 55-45. I mean, there's a fairly large plurality of people who are Democrat or Republican in most of these districts. And it all depends on who gets their people out to vote and whether they're motivated to vote. And I can't tell you whether Republicans are motivated or not. The issues and themes depend on the election, the people, the personalities, and everything else. And it's about mobilizing voters. I know Republicans because I have a lot of friends that are Republican, and I got to tell you, with Republicans, it's just going to be a question of whether they can get them up off their ass. But I hear Democrats saying the same thing, because they are, you know, they really enjoy blocking the freeway, but when it comes to getting up and going down to vote, that's a whole other story. And so, in conclusion, without boring you all night with this, this is how I see it. If the election, this election, 2018, is truly about the president, then think about this. So for the last roughly 2 years, at least it'll be 2 years in November, we will have seen nothing but an all-out media war on this individual by the name of Donald Trump first, and then as president, Donald Trump. Whether it is the media, whether it is the quote-unquote deep state, whether it is the FBI, whether it is Democrat congressmen, it is constantly in front of us, and it is constantly in front of us in a media that people cannot stand. Some people who can't stand him politically actually feel sorry for the president, and everyone hates, and I'm going to say it again, hates the media, hates. It doesn't matter if they're Republicans or Democrats. They all hate the media. So a full court press by the media could possibly fail to score and turn around and lose the game, right? So what if people who feel bad for the president, if he's what the election is going to be all about, go out and vote? And what if Trump actually gains seats in this election? It certainly isn't without question. It certainly isn't without precedent, despite what the talking heads say. And really, in recent history, if you look at Reagan and Bush, both Bushes and Clinton. Let me take a sip of coffee. Oh, that's so good. I've got some Honduran coffee, and it's amazing. Or Peruvian. The Latin American coffee is the best. Anyway. Or what if, for all the things that they say, what if it turns out to be true and it is a bloodbath for Republicans because of Trump's shenanigans? I look at it, and this is my takeaway. I think it's going to be a mixed bag. In some House elections, many of which Republicans are defending this year, local issues and local candidates' positions on national issues like gun rights and health care for the economy and so forth are going to figure in. My concern with the Republican Party is they're not making the case. They don't seem to have a plan other than Trump, and they tend to paint with a wide brush. Although some of them are very specific about what they want to do. On the Democrat side, getting rid of Trump, impeaching Trump, and free college, I don't really call that an agenda, but free healthcare in college, no. And then there's this question of how the economy is doing. If the economy is truly doing better, I find it hard to believe that Republicans or Democrats would go out and vote against that. Some state delegations might actually flip geographies. So you might have one district that flips to Republican and another district in the state that flips to Democrat. Governorships are almost certainly changed. Certainly a quote-unquote Republican governor in Illinois is probably going to flip because the last poll I saw had the Democrat candidate in Illinois at something like 17 points ahead. A thin majority in the Senate will emerge for the Democrats, or the Republicans will maintain a thin hold on the upper house, unless there is some crazy thing that happens between now and November 6th, and there's a wave one way or the other. This whole thing about a Democrat wave, when I look at these districts, I don't see it. If they don't show up to vote, and if we don't see Democrats pushing the voter turnout higher, then I don't think that that's going to happen. You're just going to end up with some wins and some losses. And if the Republicans are defending the most races, they could conceivably lose 21 seats. I wouldn't bet on that. I wouldn't bet against it, but I really wouldn't bet on them losing 21 seats. If you feel the future of the country hangs in the balance and you're not out working 24 hours a day to get people to vote, good luck, because the other side probably is. When for Republicans, it comes down to money. Yard signs and door knocking is not going to win the election. What's going to win the election is television ads, to tell you the truth, and Facebook ads and digital advertising and getting the word out with a message that actually forms a wedge. Because when it comes down to the decision, a few votes one way or the other is going to make a difference. You know, I have candidates in my state for Congress that won by 200 or 300 votes. So I here's the way I look at it. I don't predict wide margins one way or the other unless a large number of Democrats or Republicans come out to vote. And my best advice for everyone is not to listen to all these people telling you what it all means, because honestly, they don't know. And they certainly don't know what it means after the thing's over with and they start telling you what's going to happen again. When Bush won the toss-up from the Supreme Court in 2000, who knew that a short time later, Democrats and Republicans would be voting together on the Patriot Acts and to invade Iraq to make those votes almost unanimous? Nobody knew that. In 1912, Woodrow Wilson campaigned on lower tariffs and banking reform. In 1916, he campaigned on the slogan, "He kept us out of war," although apparently he never actually said that. Who knew that in 1917, the House would vote for a resolution declaring war on Germany 373-50, and the Senate would vote 82-6. Same thing in World War II. Who knew that, when Roosevelt was elected for his third term, that he would be presiding over a unanimous declaration of war after Pearl Harbor? Nobody knew, because nobody could have predicted it. Certainly some, but they certainly didn't predict Pearl Harbor. And that's the whole point of this. And this is why I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. I'm not going to tell you what to vote for. I'm not going to tell you any of this, because in the end, despite all of the "you're absolutely right" Toms that call into the talk radio station and the furious seething Republicans or the furious seething Democrats who are going to turn out in waves like The Walking Dead, it all depends on who votes, and it is virtually unpredictable until it happens. And you get to decide for yourself. In the meantime, I'm going to do some fun podcasts about some other stuff and wait for Election Day to show up on November 6th, and then I'll be right here to give you real-time results and get the podcast up before the end of the evening. So thanks for listening to this podcast and for listening actually to the whole series. I'm almost sorry that I did it in the sense that it's just a lot of political podcasts, but it's great because it's in one spot, and we'll see what happens. And, now I can talk about issues and I can talk about things in the news, but I won't do that on the next podcast. So thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, and on the new Google Podcasts. We have lots of solutions for Android devices, as well as listening on the page, on the stream at thebobdavispodcast.com. Or if you click on individual podcasts, you can pull the podcast up and listen to it right off the page. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And I appreciate your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. It's automatic.